This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league, starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu. Whether packing for a destination vacation or planning a staycation, Macy's has everything you need. Summer's almost here, and I'm so excited to take a trip with Bryn. We are planning it right now. We are heading to Macy's before we pack to grab new shoes we can wear all day with anything. I'm excited to lay in the sun with key pieces from Macy's, like my new Dolce Vita sandals and Levi's skirt. I am ready to relax and look and feel amazing. Oh, how good that sounds. Of course, I can't forget a new beach bag. I have been eyeing the collection of beach bags from Macy's, and I can't wait for you to see what I choose. Shop at Macy's.com/ownyourstyle.
If your business needs a new application, then developers will have to write code, a lot of code. If an application needs to be modernized, then you'll need time, resources, and caffeine. If that sounds daunting, then you need Watson X Code Assistant, AI designed to multiply developer productivity so you can generate code quickly. Let's create a more modern foundation for business with Watson X Code Assistant. Learn more at ibm.com/codeassistant. IBM. Let's create.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks. How are you doing?
I'm good. So you've been on here once before. Can you tell everybody what are you? Because I have a woman who I work with who's a psychoanalyst. I've been working with her for years. I never knew exactly what she is. She could be a podiatrist for all I know. She's very, very helpful and she listens and she's smart, but she's a psychoanalyst. So what are you?
I'm a psychologist.
Okay.
I work, I'm what you would call a CBT psychologist, so a cognitive behavioral therapist. So within psychology, there's many different orientations. How do we do things? So I work a lot with people with the way that they think, their rational thoughts, as opposed to their irrational thoughts, how their irrational thoughts affect their behavior. But I take it from a different approach. I take it from a family systems approach, where they come from. So
you specialize in family?
You know, doing what I do, it's hard not to, right? Because we all come from family. So if you don't understand a healthy family dynamic or what an unhealthy family dynamic creates, it's hard to do what you do. So I specialize, I like to say I specialize in people and I treat the person. So a lot of anxiety, a lot of depression, a lot of trauma work. So it all depends on what they're bringing me. I think it's very important that we look at that person and understand who they are and where they come from and treat that.
And you work with kids and adults?
Correct.
Okay. So I recently experienced a death, and it's become this conversation that has been surprisingly engaging, because I think so many people are repressing these discussions and not talking about it. People don't always talk about sex. People don't always talk about money. People certainly don't talk about death in like a complex way. They'll talk about they experienced the death. They're sad about their situation. But there aren't these sort of cross channels of discussion that I'm finding, particularly in women and what's going on. And it's sort of like there's like a one size fits all death grieving model versus like the different types, which I sort of came to. So I was realizing a couple of things. I was realizing, one, that there's obviously no right or wrong, but every single type of death is different and each death has a different dynamic. So like I've said, someone could be 96 years old, had a beautiful life, had a great family, everything was healthy. That's sad. They've been around so long. Somebody else loses, God forbid, someone, I can't even say it out loud, but younger than them, or someone takes their own life, or there's addiction, it's an unexpected accident. And like each thing has a different tone to it.
Sure.
And then as a cousin to that, there are many different brands and types of grieving. I thought about all this during what I chose to do, just based on my own gut, but there are many different types of grieving. So I've seen really only Shiva and Catholic and wake and everyone's together and laughing and food and flowers and jokes and getting drunk and stories and photos. And I did not, I've done that. But in my recent loss of my mother, I feel like in both scenarios, it was kind of an unusual circumstance with the death and the grieving. So I kind of wanted to get into both of those situations, because me bringing up the fact that it was a complicated relationship, you don't want to be disingenuous and like act like you're like, I was sobbing more than I was for people that I had a good relationship with, which is crazy. But I didn't want, you don't want to be disingenuous where you're acting like you had this amazing relationship. You're just telling, I was just telling the truth about what the deal was.
Right.
And then also, it's not like, it's a very insular thing, this particular death. So I wasn't like having a bunch of people over to tell me how great it was and how she lit up the room. So it was like a different deal. So what do you have, we'll get into details after, but what do you have to say about both of those constructs?
No, I think that's very interesting. And something that we don't really give enough credit to is that other kind of deaths we mourn also. So the death of a relationship and the death of a job or a situation or an experience, right? Mm. There are many things we mourn, and there are many things that trigger our responses in that same way. When things don't happen. So when you say you had a complicated relationship with your mom, when she passed, yes, you could be mourning the passing of your mom, but you can also be mourning the potential of a better relationship with her. You could be mourning, having that sadness and mourning the loss of a childhood that you wish you had. There's so many more complication and complicated layers to that, that it's not, you know, it's not, it doesn't say enough to just say, yeah, I'm sad and I'm mourning the loss, because it's how many losses? There's a lot of losses there.
Right. And what was shocking to me, different than any other time, sometimes the stages of grief are predictable, what people say. But in this particular grieving, it was like coming out of my body in ways that I wasn't expecting. Like my mind, I was not, you're right. Like you couldn't help but you were just feeling. And it was like, I was going to the movie of my entire life that I haven't watched ever. I've never watched the movie. I haven't allowed myself to go in and see that movie. It's too hard a movie. So I watched the movie. Part of the movie was super like happy moments as a child. Part was such frustration for like not being able to continue that. And like, why? Part was the person who passed away, like mourning them, like their poor life, like
right. My
poor life, their poor life. The loss wasn't really the thing I was mourning, because I didn't really have a great relationship. I was mourning, I was feeling sorry for myself in many of the cases. And I also could only live in that movie. And then after like a couple of weeks, it just like, it passed, like the movie was over. And I thought I would never get out of this movie, good and bad.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's funny, it's an interesting analogy that you make, but I'll disagree one thing when you say that you never watched the movie, right? It's sort of, we don't go to movie theaters anymore, right? But when you go to a movie theater and you're waiting for your theater to open up, but the other theaters are playing movies, and you sort of hear things, you don't understand the dialogue. You hear an explosion, you hear a car chase, you hear some laughter, you hear traces of what that movie is, but you just don't know what that movie is going on. Those memories that are really hard to understand and really hard to take, or memories that we had that were so harmful and painful for us that we pushed back, those are like that, where they're there. We may not be fully aware of them, then we may not be fully in touch with them, but they're there and they're affecting us, and they're going to affect our decisions that we make and how we define who we are, right?
But and they're in your subconscious in a lot of ways. So it's weird how this like was a pinata that cracked open. Yes. I've worked with a psychoanalyst for years. She really didn't, she knows about me because it's drive-by explanations. Oh yeah, and that used to happen when I was a kid, and that, like you're saying, but it wasn't ever going there. And you're about to get on a rock. It first happens and you are like, wait, what's going to happen now? Like I remember getting the call and I'm thinking, Because for many years, I've thought, what happens the day that she dies? And I've thought it was a drawer and I'd be fine with it because it wasn't a good relationship. And it's not at all what you're going to expect. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden you're on this roller coaster and you're like, we're going on a fucking ride right now. Mm-hmm. And you don't, and it's about to start and you're on the floor, collapsed in the hallway, just like needing to be next to the bathroom tile by yourself.
Sure.
And right. then you're in shock and then you're in denial and then you're in sadness. And then you only are willing to listen to one kind of music, like a fucking weirdo. And you're up. I still haven't slept a full night since it.
Right.
But like things, so
you know, I'll tell you what though, when I've had people in therapy who will tell me what their life was like, and they'll say it like boom, 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 sort of like right. you, real quick, bullet points. This is what it was like, and I have to slow them down. So wait, what do you mean? What do you mean that happened? And what did you experience from that? And how did you experience that? How do you define that? What does that mean to you? Right. And I'll be honest with you, I stay away from that real douchey psychology question. How did that make you feel? I hate that question. Right. Everybody hates that question, right? But you want to get to that. How do you define that? What did that mean to you? Because then when we slow things down, it's like, well, I'm in therapy and, you know, I'm doing the work.
Well, because some people want to be, well, that's like going to the gym and just like saying, because you walked in the gym.
Yes.
Yes, but I will tell you this from my perspective. And yes, my therapist has asked me that too. It's something that often you're in preparation for game day, because the truth of the matter is, you saying, how did that make you feel? Or whether you say, what was your experience? Or whatever you say, it doesn't matter. Like, this was like, I'm not saying therapy is great and it's amazing. And it's like stretching all the time. And when the big race comes, then you're kind of almost prepared, but not quite.
Right. Right.
But I will say, there's nothing like someone smashing that pinata with a bat, or doing ayahuasca, people talk about, or doing EMDR, or doing like, this was not something that 10 years of therapy could do for me. Like, people, I think you just have to be aware when the car crash comes or when something happens, how you're going to brace yourself or how you're going to deal with it. Like,
right.
And that's where I come up with the not going and drinking and laughing and getting the pictures out and distracting. Like, I didn't like proactively choose. My body chose to just lean all the way into it, to get outside and take a walk, to listen to the music, to cry through it. And I didn't know that I was necessarily doing the right thing, but it's what I did.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe it was the right thing for that moment and the right thing for you at that moment. Right?
Yeah. Now I want to talk about this emotional trauma. This generational trauma concept. I had never really heard that term before. My followers are so savvy, so smart. You ever want to learn something, go into my comments and read their experiences. So I've gotten easily 1,000 messages from people
right.
estranged from this person, that person, it's complicated, or they're the parent, or, you know, like all of it. And this really made people stop and think. So I felt like it was great that I was taking on the responsibility of, at least if I made mistakes, or if I had these experiences, or if I didn't make mistakes, just having this experience, this has definitely helped a lot of people, and this conversation will. But this generational trauma thing, where we know it, but we don't really think about it. And it doesn't mean you have to do the same negative thing. I know people who came from abusive backgrounds and they're too coddly to their kids, because it's a pendulum the other way.
Mm-hmm.
But I did learn through this process that my, you know, mother, she, her sister, and her brother were beaten the absolute shit out of. And the brother, the uncle, who did not choose to ever have kids, who happens to live in the next town, I found out, he is more like me in the sense that he was SWAT team, he was military, he was cop, he was control, flies helicopters, like methodical, like, you know, textbook control, like me, organizing, packing. Like, you see the difference of how we all, like, managed.
Right.
But it also... And you see whatever his father did. But this was the 70s. No one was cut. I've had people come out and say now that they lived next door to me in Rockville Center, Long Island, and that they were worried for my safety because the cops were there and there was a lot of abuse in my house. And it was the 70s. You drove drunk. You didn't wear a seatbelt. You let your kids out the back door. You smoke while you're pregnant. Like, this is why this is a whole different deal. Today, my life as a child, someone would be coming over to the house and taking me out of there.
Mm-hmm.
So what about all this generational trauma? A lot of these moms that I'm talking to, these women, are children of the 70s and the 60s, and it's a different deal.
Right. So when you go back as far as that, you can understand how people, how their trauma affects the way they see themselves, right? And how it skews the way that they see themselves. And looking for that control, it's an interesting word to use. Someone who's bulimic, like your mom, think about how controlling she was. I mean, outside her life must have been very chaotic, right? But what's the one thing she was able to control?
Well, she had that crutch of every meal going to the bathroom afterwards. And it's so self-loathing. Yes. And I want to talk about, I'm going to have an ED expert on here too, but I'm sure you know a decent amount about this. I have never seen, I've heard of a lot of people in college. I've heard a lot of people with eating disorders. Mm-hmm. My mother was a brick shit house. She was 90 pounds. She would come home from Studio 54. My stepfather would lock the door. She would smash her fist through the window. I've seen her go head to head with truck drivers and kick with her cowboy boot their truck. She was a fucking bad bitch. Like, she was insane and tough and smart and strong and scary. And you can imagine where I can be tough and strong and scary, but it's under control. Mm-hmm. So I think about the fact that she had a lifelong, never once admitted it to anyone. Every bulimic I've ever heard of has admitted it to someone, or you hear the story later or something. I've never heard of a person that I have stood outside of a bathroom, heard her throwing up for an hour and a half, gone in, seen it around the toilet, smelled it, seen it in her eyes, all of it, and heard lie about it my whole life. And I've never before this experience thought about what the hell that did to me. I was embarrassed of her. I was shameful. I watched her lose her beauty. I didn't want her to come over anyone's house. I was always on edge, and she was always on edge, smashing everything in the house, torturing waiters for the way things were. And I think about what the hell that life was like, how she survived, how she lived as long as she even did.
Right. And
every meal.
That affects a child. So, you know, how that's going to affect your young self, right? And that if I'm better, she wouldn't be doing this. If I'm a better kid, she wouldn't be doing that. I'm not good enough, right? And hey, listen, maybe she was thinking that too when she was growing up. If I'm better, my dad won't beat on me. If I'm better, my dad won't beat on my brother. Let's keep it calm. Let's keep it quiet. So we take, as a child, we take responsibility for the actions of our parents, because we put them up on pedestals. Not until later on we realize that, if we ever do. But by that time, we already have established the way we feel about ourselves, our sense of self. And that's what's really damaging, is that we take on responsibility of things that we don't have any control over, and then think that it's our shortcoming, that we can't fix it and change it. And then we overcompensate for that later on in life. And it can go either way. Either we feed into it that I'm a piece of shit and I'm not good enough, or we go overboard and we try to control and become like almost narcissistic and like little kings in our kingdom. And then they become abusive as well. So we can fluctuate within that continuum. Doesn't have to be, but many times we can see that, and then we replicate those relationships. Right? Something called replication and rectification, right? So we can replicate a relationship with somebody else that kind of makes us feel the way that our parent made us feel. And because if we can fix that person, then we're actually fixing our parent and we're feeling better about ourselves.
And that's where you're saying coming into being very aware of where you come from when you're making choices with a partner. And it could seem right, like it's in a good package, but it could be for a different
reason. For sure. And then yeah, you get that generational trauma, because it continues onto the next one.
But it may not be directly with you and your kid. It could be you with your husband. It could be the choice. It could be sideways.
Of course. But if you pick that spouse that's unstable, right? The same level of instability with a spouse. Well, what kind of family dynamic are you creating for your kid?
Right. Well, what's interesting. A different
one, but certainly an unstable one.
Yeah. I can remember the resounding feeling that people may relate to if they've been in the house with, I had an alcoholic and a bulimic chain smoker. Like, then my stepfather, gambler, there were always bookies coming to my house and like gambling all the football games. So I had a lot of addiction and physical abuse in my house. So my resounding feeling was walking on eggshells and always like worrying about what everybody else, like I remember coming into my 20s, like are those two getting along at the table? Like everybody, like reading every situation in every room, which has been very good for me in business because I can be in a boardroom and understand what the hell everyone else is doing, thinking, saying, smelling. I can read an eating disorder from two blocks away. A nuance. I was on a show with someone and it really triggered me because I can smell something before anyone else can smell it. In lying, in stealing, in cheating, I can feel it because, and I had never really made that connection. And Melinda, my therapist, said, because I've seen things in other people that I've caught really fast before even people in my life who are around it more caught mm-hmm. it. My stepfather was living with my mother for all those years. I was the one who let him know about the eating disorder. Mm-hmm. I just, from very young, from seeing all this physical abuse and all this stuff, I just knew I could clock anything anywhere.
Right.
And it's kind of like being it's not great because it's like being a cop. You're like constantly, it's like that movie where Jim Carrey could hear every single thing that everyone was thinking about him, or Matthew McConaughey. Right. It's kind of, it's because you're so, your instrument is so in tune to chaos and like dysfunction.
And it's the role that you had, because if you're so tuned into the dysfunction and the chaos, then your role, like you called yourself a cop, but what's the cop's role? To serve and protect, right? To make sure, maintain order. So your role there is to make sure everyone's okay. How can you possibly be able to make everything okay? How old were you?
Started the fighting in the house where I'd have to call the cops was like 5, but the throwing up was 7 that I first caught it.
Sure. So that a 7-year-old is going to make sure that everyone's okay, or everyone is going to be well and healthy. It's impossible. So you were destined to fail. So how do we feel when we fail? We don't feel good. It doesn't make us feel good to fail. It doesn't matter that what we're failing at is something we can never do, right? That doesn't matter. What matters is that we fail and we feel like a failure. And so that comes part of our building block of who we think we are as a person, which is why that drives people sometimes, maybe such as yourself, to be successful, but drives to prove that you do have that worth.
It's all the time. Yes. And I see that even with my father, who treated me so poorly and he was so successful and he dangled it over his head and he bragged, like, to this day, he's dead. And I still want to shove my success up his ass. Right. Not my mother, because I have more compassion. My mother was jealousy. She wanted to be famous. She wanted to be relevant. She wanted to be fashionable. She liked the trappings and the nice things. But like Melinda would say, like, I'm living out their goals. She feels that there's like a definite connection. Forget the skinny girl and alcohol. Like, oh my God, Freud is knocking on my door.
Right.
But the because people always want to know where the drive comes from. And sometimes I just simplify it to my father was a Hall of Fame horse trainer. And he was a worker. And my mother, to the day she died, was a worker. Like, I come from no complain, no explain, no shortcut workers, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. with the exception of dysfunction from her, but they just are, there's a work ethic, but I think it's more than that. Like you were saying, there's a drive that's like, and it's been insatiable, but really recently in the last couple of years, I keep getting towards a point where I really won't do anything that I don't want to do. And I don't go just for money ever. But the more that I am truthful about what I don't want to do, and the more that I say no, the more that walks in the door. Like, the more the tables get hot, the more that I don't like desperately cling on to it.
Right, right. Because you're starting to learn how to define success and define yourself in different ways. And I think that that's super important, right? Because as a child, I'm just picturing you as a 5, 7, 8-year-old, 9-year-old, and having people over and they're all gambling. They're focused on what they're gambling on, right? They're not focused on you, right? So they're not. It's not important. You're window dressing at that point, right? So not only could a child feel like they're not good enough because they're failing at their role, they're also not good enough because no one's paying attention, right? I think you had mentioned that you're raised by wolves, right? Like no one paid attention. You were raised yourself. Right? Well, if you were good, you were worthy. If you were worthy of it, then they would have raised you. So that's the pathological thought process that we can easily engage in that we're not conscious of. It just starts that way.
Well, you also have a lack of sometimes empathy because when I was, no one ever made doctor's appointments for me. I remember having chicken pox and no one believed me. And I got 105 fever. My friend's parents had to take me to the hospital. I fell down a ski mountain, ended up in a helicopter. My ex my ex's family. Like, I was always clamoring for that. But I find that people who grow up like that, it's hard for them to empathize with people who are whining about basic things. You know, like other people that are like, that have things handed to them. You almost are jealous, or like, you just don't have a lot of tolerance for people that are like complaining and explaining.
Sure. Of course. Of course. And it brings up a, you know, you have to put up a little wall there too. You don't want to get close to those people because they have it so easy.
Mm-hmm.
So they're obviously not like me, because they were good enough to get it that easy. And I find interesting too, when you get older and get to those teen years and you start picking your partners and you get to your 20s, I find a lot of times people will push healthy people away from them because there's something about me that isn't right. Right. I'm growing up always thinking that there's something about me with something that's not right. I may not be able to put my finger on it per se, but I know there's something there. So what's wrong with this person that they like me? They seem so good. Don't they see what I see, that there's something not right about me? So there's something wrong with them, or I'm not worthy of that. So I'm going to push them away. And I'm going to go towards someone who may not treat me well, who may not treat me that great, who may be somewhat of a liar here, or, you know, cuts the corner there and turns into something bigger later on, because, well, that's what I'm used to. Right. And that's what I'm worth. And of course, they're not healthy. They like me. So and that's sort of how we perpetuate what we've learned.
Yes, but it also could be like, I remember younger, this has all changed. I'm older now. You really don't realize anything until you get older. But like, I used to be, you know, I used to get a bad haircut and my stepfather would take us down to Florida, or we go to Vegas and go to the craps table. Like, action junkie, you know, that explains a lot of how I am. Like, let's go. Let's do it. Let's figure it out. Let's solve it. Let's go do $300 million in relief. No problem. You know,
right.
I had somebody once say to me, now you're going to see what I was like on the basketball court. And I was talking to my stepfather the other day after a while, and he was like, the basketball court. I was like, the racetrack. Like, you know, it becomes like, I literally grew up at a place where it's the fastest sport, period. Like, it's just action and gambling and drinking and money and highs and lows. So it's hard to, you know, I do crave stability, and I'm so much of a homebody. Thank God I went that direction, but it's hard to get to that place. This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owners' racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league, starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
Hey there. Did you know that May is Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month? Macy's is celebrating by highlighting some cool AAPI-owned brands like Cardon, Kaja, Amelia George, and Hey Maeve. I mean, I love that a big brand like Macy's is supporting Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month. It's important. But you know what? The best reason to check out these brands is that they're just really awesome. Seriously, you need to check them out. And you know what else? You have a great opportunity to open up access to college for AAPI students and help them succeed by donating to APIA Scholars. APIA is the nation's leading nonprofit organization devoted to the academic, personal, and professional success of Asian American, Native Hawaiian, and Pacific Islander students. You can donate online or just round up your purchase at Macy's when you check out. So do what you can to help. Join Macy's and round up your purchase to the nearest dollar at checkout to support APIA Scholars. Shop Asian American and Pacific Islander owned brands at Macy's.com or in store.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. Love this. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs on demand, temp to hire, part-time, or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With their easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. Visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Did it take you time to get to that place? Do you think?
Totally. And you don't even know you're on the roller coaster. You don't even know you're on the racetrack.
Right.
You're just on the race. Well, yeah. I mean, all those years before I had a kid, it was great that I had a kid late because I was running on that racetrack like a maniac.
Right. Right. And there was probably, you know, there's that part of you that was healthy. I mean, no one's all like, you know, wholly unhealthy, right? You have healthy parts. Right. So that healthy part of you knew I have to wait, right? I'm not ready for that. I have to get through this until I'm ready for that next part of my life. And I think that that's very telling. I mean, it's very good.
So what about, what about memories and flashes of sexual abuse that your mind plays tricks on you? You know it happened. You kind of pretend it didn't happen. There's nothing you can really do about it. How does that manifest itself? What comes out in people with situations like that? What does that create for them? Because for me, it would be lack of trust of males.
I mean, it can be for sure, right? It depends on how what the age was. What was the age?
7 to 17 or 18. And I say 17 or 18 because in that case, it was you're an adult, but it's people that were in a parental figure, like a very close family friend that you thought was family, trying to sleep with you, but in a different way because you're an adult now, like propositioning you and being sleazy with you, where when you were younger, it was people taking advantage of you. And in my case, my whole entire childhood was being around a bunch of racetrack degenerates at all times. When, if you know, you know, there's horse trainer, my stepfather's a horse trainer, and he had all these guys around with different nicknames, and they were just always around the house. It was like a degenerate posse. Yeah. And me, and my mother was never there.
Right.
So my stepfather was there, which was admirable that he was the only one staying with me when my mother was away having affairs in Wales with this guy and then went away to an institution. But I was always with a bunch of different men, always just dropping me off, picking me up. Like, I was always with men. So right. You can imagine what that was like with these racetrack degenerates.
Sure, sure. So there's definitely, you definitely can create some trust issues for sure, right? It's very confusing. It's very confusing for a child. You know, that their bodies could betray them, right? As you get older, they betray. Your body could react in certain ways. So your whole idea of sex and your sexuality gets in, yep, puts in question. You feel, no, there's potential for feeling abandoned, and abandoned in different ways, right? So abandoned by your mom who didn't protect you from the men, hypersexualized. I'm thinking that this is what you need to do in order to get what you want. You know, feeling
it can go either way, or being super repressed.
That, you know, the difficult thing about this field that I'm in is that there, it can go either way, right? There's no hard truths to it, this is why it's very important to treat the person, not the problem.
That's exactly right. So exactly, because I have heard of situations that you're talking about where a woman becomes extremely promiscuous.
Yeah.
And I experienced an abnormally latent time to even consider using any kind of a toy or masturbation or anything. It was not even like, it was never, I don't remember it ever being discussed with me, but it was something that obviously you've heard about. It was like a block until, I mean, into 30s, okay? And I remember the first time I ever felt that I could trust someone in a sexual situation.
Did you see it as a tool? How did you do it?
No, it's not something to do for just like only pleasure. It's something to do to really connect with someone, and you're then in a relationship where there's an expectation from someone, right? Like someone would have to like be legally bound to call you if you've had sex with them. Like, right, that would be the ultimate violation if they weren't. And even in sex, you don't trust people sometimes.
Right. Right. Okay.
Even if you're in a relationship with them, you may not trust their intentions.
Yeah, I'm curious. I'm curious as a child how you understood what mom was doing after she came back from the hospital being beaten and then having sex with her abuser.
I knew she despised it. I could tell. Obviously, she was doing it as an obligatory thing,
right?
Or some like tumultuous highs and lows addiction thing. Right. But there's no way, because that's where money came into, and she stayed with us. She used to tell me she stayed with all these men because of the fact that they supported her, and like there was all this information that I was privy to. Yeah, there's a lot of noise there for me with sex and money and all this type of stuff,
right?
Because of all that stuff,
right? And that, you see, all those things that swirl around you, they don't have anything to do with you as a person. And that's when you say noise, it distracts about who you are as a person. And I don't mean you, I mean us in general, but it distracts who we do and how we define ourselves as a person, right?
Yeah, but we also can't a la carte menu this thing. I wouldn't be so successful and be who I am and be able to communicate in this way and do this if I didn't have this background. I mean, I'm super
there's a great, I'm going to reference a song, poem slash song, Class of 99, Always Use Your Sunscreen. I don't know if you ever heard it. It's great. And it's basically giving advice. And one of the lines is, live in California, but leave before you get too soft, and live in New York, but leave before you get too hard. Right. So, yeah, I mean, it's important.
I did both.
Yes.
I literally did both. I was in California and left before I got too soft. Yes. After yes. 10 years.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Right. So, you know, when we have these types of experiences, they don't necessarily have to entirely doom us. Right. You don't have to end up on a dirty mattress somewhere with a hypodermic needle in your arm, right? You can use those to propel you to do things that are healthier, but it's when you're not fully in touch with things where it can go off the rails, right? And I think that's what's really important. And sometimes things happen in our lives that will bring us back, wake us up, and ring that bell and realize, holy shit, I got to make that change. I can't do it too much. I have to make a shift. Right. And I think that's important to listen to those bells. Right.
It's so true, because this guy, Breck, that I know, who's a life coach, he says he doesn't believe in obligation and doing things just because you have to. And it's funny, like I often see people with other people that are abusive to them or mean to them or family members. They tolerate it. It's the dynamic. And it's, I believe, negativity, like it's contagious. It like gets on you. I don't want it anywhere near me. And when I was talking to a friend from high school, because I've opened up and started to reconnect, I've talked to my uncle, I talked to friends, I opened up a door I haven't opened up in years. And one of them just said it the best. She said, it feels like, because I felt guilt, and what about these letters that she wrote me saying she loved me, and should I have gone there 6 months ago, and all this stuff. And like, I was remembering things like only, I was remembering no bad. I was like delusional. She said, it sounds like you had to let go or you both would have drowned.
Mm-hmm.
Because I always needed a justification. I would talk to different therapists about the fact that I just stuck this in a drawer and was not opening it, because every time I opened it, it was utterly nasty, utterly abusive, just felt like a place I didn't want to be. And I didn't want that on my daughter at all. Even right. When it started to get on my daughter a little in certain language and talking about my mother, you know, oh, I gained 15 pounds, even though she was 80 pounds, or, you know, saying just some nasty things. Like I was like, I shut it down. I didn't want any of that on my kid.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, do you have any idea why you may have kept those letters? How come?
I didn't even know I had them. I didn't even know I had them. And they were only from one period.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking for a photo.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, what the f-? It was on my most raw day. She died Friday, Sunday. I'd been obsessing over these pictures of when she looked beautiful, because her vanity was such a thing and her beauty was extraordinary. And the pictures that I had was really when she started to rot, which was when she was 40, which I thought was old when I was a kid. And now being 53, like I realized even when she was like 53, she just all of a sudden it escalated real fast. You can hang on to a disorder like that in your 30s, but I don't know if it's just like infinite dog years when you hit 40. It just deteriorated. And I always wanted people to see her in the way she was when she was young and beautiful. She wasn't even an interior designer. She was an interior architect, like doing her own drawings. She was a badass.
Mm-hmm.
But the letters, I was on a Sunday and I was looking for photos, because I was looking for these specific photos of when I remember being happy, this nature photo, and I remember being happy, and then ones when I remember her being beautiful, like having the light before it went out. And I opened up these letters, and it was, I have the chills. I was like screaming. And they were all the same year, and it was a time that she had been to the institution, and she had stopped drinking for a period, and they were like barely accountable, but just like, you didn't have it easy, but you're my light, you're the love of my life. Because she did love me, and I feel like a fraudulence, and I had fun in my life, and I traveled, and I went to places, and I had nice things, and my father's partner got me a Rolex at 13. Like, I wasn't living like panhands. I'm not trying to explain this. Like, I never had fun. I didn't, went to Disneyland, I'm sure. I was drinking alcohol and going to nightclubs at 13, but I was having fun. I mean, it sounds crazy. It was not all bad.
Right. But those women, those letters seem like a window, right? I mean, at some point in your life, you consciously chose to keep them.
I guess, yeah.
You made that choice. Yeah. And those letters are saying that you had it hard and I love you. I mean, that's what you wanted to hear all those years. And that's like a window of health that she had. Almost like a dementia patient kind of comes out one day and says, oh, hi, you know, where they have a window of resemblance. But that's a window that you recognized of what you always wanted.
Very weird.
But you didn't ever have the entire life. That, I think that's why you kept it. And that's why you had such a hard response to it, right? It's an emotional response to it.
It was, I've never gone in that cabinet. It was so strange. So I do believe in all these other energy, these signs.
Now you moved how many times? You've always took those with you.
Yes. And I haven't seen it for 30 years. No, exactly. I've never seen them since they were written is what I'm saying. I don't know where they came from. It was very strange. And they were on Ziggy and Hello Kitty stationery. That was my childhood stationery that she had kept and written them on. It was like very strange. It was traumatic, but it did break something open.
Yeah. Yeah, it did.
It did break something open.
Yeah.
And what about specific eating disorders? What makes someone choose a specific, or it chooses them, or what is bulimia? And this, because she was bulimia with laxatives, which I think is a version of bulimia also. What is that? What is that versus being anorexic or some other thing, exercise orexic or whatever?
You know, I can tell you is that eating disorders, bulimia specifically, you know, they're anxiety disorders, right? So it's when we have an anxiety disorder, it's basically a need for control that we just don't have and trying to gain control in some way. So, you know, look, if your mom recognized that her beauty was the way she was getting through life, maybe she had that thought, right? You saw her as a badass and she was so talented and all these other things. She may not have seen herself as that. That
she was a beaut. Yeah, but what about the fact that you aren't, she was so smart, aren't you intellectually realizing that you're ruining your looks by vomiting the most disgusting, it's like putting shit all over yourself.
No, but at that point, it's, you're not seeing the reality, right? There's a body dysmorphia going on where you're looking yourself in the mirror and you see something vastly different than what's really there, right? That's body dysmorphic disorder is something that's very real and affects people in all different areas. But what she could be experiencing that is being so afraid of losing her youth. So afraid. I think I heard you say something that she got really mean to you, verbally mean later on, like when you were in your 20s.
She was always verbally mean.
She was always verbally mean.
Yeah.
But again, saying that she wanted.
It got heightened.
When it got worse or heightened is exactly when you said that it got escalated for her, right? Her 40s, when you're 20s.
Oh, her eating disorder. Being caught escalated it, I think. I mean, of course, it's not going to be the same when you're younger and dabbling in it, but I was seven, sure. She was 27. So I don't know when it started. I think it started when she was 16.
No, I'm saying it got worse. And how, when she realized she was losing her beauty and losing that avenue, that vehicle for that, I could see how she would, right. She would become more vicious. She would become more vicious for herself, more vicious for you. You know, I wish I was you as, I wish I had your life. Or I wish I was you as a.
Yes.
That's worse than a left-handed compliment, right? You know, that's a really harmful, hurtful thing to say.
It's so funny because I've never saw it that way as a kid, but she said it to me so many times. She wanted my life.
Right.
And I didn't see it as harmful. Right. I just saw it. But she said it from when I was a really young kid. I remember that being a thing. And I remember other people reacting to it the way you are. Thinking that, but I didn't at all think it. I like
we could tease. I tease my kids all the time. Oh, yeah, I wish I had your life, right? You know,
no, different, you know,
it's
different.
Way different. It's way different. And I think that that's what she was doing. You know, that it was as looking. It wasn't about you. It was about what she didn't have, what she lost.
Well, she also said she gave up her life for me many times and stayed with these men for me. I stayed with these men for you. Like, it's a very, so that stuff was
a lot of resentment and a lot of guilt.
Right.
So you experienced a ton of guilt from, I would imagine, right? And that from her resentment.
I don't know. I just know that I remember that statement my whole life. Like, it's, I don't remember a lot of things. And even before this past week of like 2 weeks of going through it, those always stuck with me.
Right.
Like, I gave up my life for you. Like, that was something that's like a stain that's been on me my whole life.
Right. All right. So what kind of stain? Like, how does that affect your behavior? That's an interesting statement to make. It's a stain on my life. That's powerful. So what way?
I mean, I think I intellectually did not believe it, but also I don't think I it related to money a lot. I think it has everything to do with going to make your own money. I mean, money is such a massive, you know, it's ironic because I could be a billionaire if I wanted to by killing myself. And I love my free time and I have a good balance and there's a million things I've turned down way more than I've taken. So I can't say that money, like, it's not like, I see people like the Kardashians, they go for all of it. Like, I've had so many opportunities I've turned down.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that I've been obsessed with it, because that's not the case. But my whole life, I've been acutely aware of never wanting to have to depend on a man for money. Since I was extremely young. And it was exasperating even when I was broke in my late 30s and I had a man who I loved say, give up this business and why are you doing all this and why are you killing yourself? I'll take care of you. And it sounded so easy. And in one part of me, I was fighting myself because I've always wanted a man to financially take care of me, but then I would never do it. I could never gold dig or anything. It's like, it's been this complete rub. Where I love a man to take care of me and shower me because I have that from my childhood, but could never really, really allow them to. I could never really want to, like, you know, share property or like anything like that. This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league, starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
Hey there. Did you know that May is Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month? Macy's is celebrating by highlighting some cool AAPI-owned brands like Cardon, Kaja, Amelia George, and Hey Maeve. I mean, I love that a big brand like Macy's is supporting Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month. It's important. But you know what? The best reason to check out these brands is that they're just really awesome. Seriously, you need to check them out. And you know what else? You have a great opportunity to open up access to college for AAPI students and help them succeed by donating to APIA Scholars. APIA is the nation's leading nonprofit organization devoted to the academic, personal, and professional success of Asian American, Native Hawaiian, and Pacific Islander students. You can donate online or just round up your purchase at Macy's when you check out. So do what you can to help. Join Macy's and round up your purchase to the nearest dollar at checkout to support APIA Scholars. Shop Asian American and Pacific Islander owned brands at Macy's.com or in store.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. Love this. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs on demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With their easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. Visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
It's time.
to hear her side of the story.
I love the show so much. I was like, please throw my name in the mix. I need to be in on this.
We were sure she was going to be the next Bachelorette. And then something changed.
I'm keeping things very, very hush-hush.
Fans of The Bachelor know exactly what we're talking about. Joe and Serena sit down for an intimate conversation with Maria Georges on Bachelor Happy Hour.
I have to ask, I heard a rumor that you were dating at one point one of Drake's best friends.
Oh, Lord have mercy on me.
Listen to Bachelor Happy Hour on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search Bachelor Happy Hour. Listen now everywhere you listen to podcasts and don't miss part two Monday night.
So what do you have to say to people who are witnessing generational trauma in their own life? They know they're in a relationship with someone. They've just experienced a death. They don't know what to do with it. You know, that sort of thing. What do you blanket right. statement say about that?
So I guess the most important thing is to treat yourself with grace, right? We have to treat ourselves with grace. I don't think we do that enough, especially when you're bad about yourself, right? We are really good at being angry at us. Our internal voices are scary, right? And, mm-hmm. and mean and difficult. And they're plain assholes, right? I mean, they just are. So yep. I think that when we realize that those thoughts that we're having are simply thoughts, right? They're just thoughts. They're not truths. They're thoughts. And that those thoughts can be easily swayed and changed based upon our past experiences, then we could take some of that sting out of them and allow ourselves to be treat ourselves with grace, to know that and to redefine who we are, what we're about. And maybe not everything that happened had to do with us per se, right? We're just wrong place, wrong time, right? Who's to say, you know, that the reason why I was treated a certain way is because I deserve
it. Has anything to do with me? Right. Has that made it? Yeah.
You know, people, we take the way we're treated as kids extremely personally, which sounds ridiculous, right? Of course we do. Mm-hmm. But many times it's not personal. It has more to do with the other person than it does have to do with us.
Right.
Right. And it's funny when
you said they want to get it off them. They're miserable. They're unhappy. It's toxin. They want to throw it up. They want to get it out.
Onto you. Like a drowning victim. It doesn't matter who's rescuing them. They just want to get up. So they're going to push down whoever's in front of them to get up.
Yes.
And that has
what more about, to do with them. Yeah, exactly. What about people who can't afford therapy? For me, I think there are a lot of online therapy options, but also I think with the internet, there was something that I looked up. Oh, I didn't really know about formative years. I've heard it. I studied psychology in college. I forgot, but I didn't really realize that by 8, like you're formed as a human in many ways. Like that's insane. That makes a lot of sense. Now I thought of that last week of all the shit that was happening to me between childhood, how many homes I'd been in and 8 years old. Now I realize a lot. Like, so I think that people just using the internet with these terms, these generational trauma terms or anxiety disorder or alcoholism or EDP, I feel like people can find a decent amount on the internet to help themselves.
They can, but you know, it scares me. It worries me, right? Because there's so much misinformation on the internet as well.
Fair.
So much misinformation. Fair.
But then support groups, something that's economical.
There's definitely a lot of support groups. There's definitely a lot of more economical ways. I think mental health, We're in a mental health renaissance right now, I think, right? Where it's more accepted. People are talking about it more. It's more in our common vernacular, right? I have so many of my teenage patients telling their friends, yeah, I can't get together because I have therapy that day, right? I mean,
right.
15, 20 years ago, that was not the case.
Right.
Never. I think that you do have to be careful where you get information from, where you get advice from. There's a lot of bad characters, right? Bad actors in any field, including mine, unfortunately. It worries me. I think, you know, health insurance is a totally different topic. We can talk a whole thing about where, you know, the health, you know, insurance companies aren't really here to help us, right? They're not for profit. So it's hard. It's definitely hard to find. And I think there's a scarcity around. And I'll be honest with you, in that vacuum, there have been other agencies and different people who have offered help that may not be as qualified. I think the most important thing that I'm going to suggest to people is to not give up finding that right person. It's not necessarily the, you know, I know some social workers who are great. I know some psychologists who are great. I know some social workers who are awful and psychologists.
No, it's a chemistry thing. It's like the same thing. You could go into vinyasa yoga. You could go into hot yoga. You could think you hate yoga because you didn't go into the right class. You could think yes. You don't like lettuce because you had arugula and not on dive. Whatever it is.
Absolutely.
I agree. I agree with that.
Keep on going and tell your story over and over and over again until you find that one person that you feel comfortable with. And sometimes
and different people are good for different things. Like this guy that I know for years, a life coach, it's more like not worrying about what happened to you when you were a child, but like intervening in your behavior now. Some people want to get all the way back and it's like a toolkit. You can use different people for different things, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Well, this was amazing and very grateful. And I think will help a lot of people. And I want to keep this conversation going here about these different things because I didn't realize I hadn't been willing to talk about any of this myself in my own life. And it's easier for it to be tangible because people know me and they know that they really don't know so much about me.
Right.
So many people have so many things that most people don't really know what's going on with them.
And you know, I think it's a beautiful thing is that you're also learning, you know, you're learning who you are along with it.
Yeah.
Right.
Of course.
Which is great. You know, and I think that our own personal evolution should never end. Never end, right? We continue to grow and learn about ourselves and how we got here and where we want to continue to go. And I think that's super important. So
I agree.
I'm thankful for and grateful that you gave me this opportunity too. Thank you.
Thank you.
I keep the conversation going. It's great.
All right, good. We'll talk soon. Thanks, Sacramento.
You got it. Take care.
Bye.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
So Puerto Rico is a beautiful place. It's a lush island. It's great for surfing. It's got a culture. Like you feel like you've really gone somewhere far and you don't need a passport, which honestly, I do really enjoy. It's a beautiful island. The people are amazing. The food is amazing. The water, the beaches, the vibe. It's a great place. It really is. In Puerto Rico, you'll taste the influence of Spanish, African, and native Taino traditions, sometimes all in the same dish. Puerto Rican chefs and restaurants put their passion into every bite. Puerto Rico is an excellent destination for food, which may not be a well-known fact. Whether it's a five-star restaurant or local favorite spot, no one does food like Puerto Rico. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.